Welcome to PCB Chat, where we talk with experts across the printed circuit design, manufacturing, and electronic supply chain fields. I'm Mike Buto, Editor-in-Chief of PCD&F and Circuits Assembly. This week's podcast is sponsored by PCB Update, the digital newsletter for the electronics industry. Get all the latest technical and business news related to PCB design, fab, and assembly. Subscribe today at PCBUpdate.com. My guest today is Joe Fama. Joe is an expert in electronics manufacturing services, with more than 30 years helping OEMs and EMS companies, particularly in Southeast Asia. Joe specializes in taking relatively unknown electronics companies and linking them with key OEMs. His career has taken him to Singapore, Malaysia, China, Mexico, Vietnam, and the Philippines. He also writes an occasional column for us. And this marks our first repeat guest on PCB Chat, so congratulations on that little bit of history, Joe.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you for the re-vite to your podcast.
You recently attended Electronica, the enormous trade show for electronics components in Munich. Was this the first time you've been there?
No, this was my fourth time over a period of 16 years. So I can report that it was larger than the last time I was there, which was 4 years ago. It was quite an event.
When you say larger, what are we talking about?
Well, this year, the reported attendees were 80,000 people. And it was just jam-packed with foot traffic, and there was over 3,000 exhibits in this venue. They had 17 halls that were kind of connected. You really needed to walk a whole bunch. They should have been renting Segways out there. You know, there had to be at least 2.5 million square feet of exhibition space overall. It was just huge. There's nothing like it in America.
So just your everyday backyard barbecue.
Yeah, absolutely. Some schnitzel and German pretzels, which was outrageously good.
Good. So in all that, there must have been quite a bit of interesting news. Anything in particular that jumped out at you?
I see more and more EMS companies specializing in centric technologies. And I see this as a trend where EMS companies are basically touting their internal technology development, driverless vehicles, AI, medical devices, IoT, 5G, wireless communication, robotics, even smart energy. So in a sense, companies are beginning to peel off into different categories, which would be coinciding to their target audience.
So in other words, they've gone way beyond just saying, hey, look, we offer turnkey, full supply chain services, logistics, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. No more generalists. And I think this is more in for the tier ones and some of the tier twos. Tier threes, of course, cannot afford that type of R&D. And they are they remain as generalist EMS providers.
And I think offline you mentioned that among those Tier 1 and Tier 2s, you saw almost every one of them there at Electronica this year.
Except one.
Yeah.
And it's Foxconn. they were nowhere to be had, and obviously they don't need a promotion.
Among the smaller companies that you saw, is there any particular way that they try to differentiate themselves or make themselves stand out among all of that space and all of those people?
I think, you know, because of the market movement, and the trend obviously is moving out of China, or at least having alternatives to China, we see more and more companies now having multiple location footprints. Even the small guys will promote that they do have affiliations or joint ventures or alliances with companies in Europe, America, Asia, even in the Eastern European regions. So we do see more of a kind of a multinational approach to even the small guys that are out there.
Is that a service you offer, helping EMS companies develop partnerships with other EMS companies?
Well, that's how I've survived 30 years in this business, I'm a strong believer of collaboration. You know, I did write a column about that, how to beat the tier ones, but it's really about having smaller companies, whether it's a NPI, the product introduction house, prototype, mom and pop shop, to collaborate with some of the larger ones. And with that, you make it very easy for the OEMs or the end customers to find a route and to high volume, low cost assembly. And I have done that for just about 30 years now, and it does work. It takes a little bit of trust among the players involved, but that's part of what I do, and that's what I'm doing today.
Now, you spent probably, what, 3, maybe 4 days at Electronica?
Yes. Yeah, it was 4 days, November 10th to the 13th. It was quite a rigorous event, but it was quite a bit of walking, and like I said, over 3,000 exhibits. You want to try to take in everything, and it was absolutely overwhelming.
How many companies do you think that you personally visited with?
I'd say, well, maybe where I actually engage in discussion, between 30 and 40 companies.
And how many of those had you never heard of before you showed up at this year's event?
Good question. I would say majority of them.
Wow.
Definitely majority. I mean, there were some companies that were regular stops for me, people that I already do business with, and the rest were just 30 or 40 some odd. Let's stop and take a look. And again, that's part of my MO going to these shows, is to find potential collaborative partnerships. So it is about introductions for the first time.
Were there any surprises in those conversations? You know, things that you weren't expecting, you know, something that they mentioned that either they're working on or somebody that they're working with, or just a particular point that you picked up on that you said, hey, look, I didn't know that before?
Not really. I mean, I think there's just a very common movement with the Asian companies looking to align themselves on the outside. For American companies, they're looking at alternatives to China. You know, that also was predictable. And in Europe, it's a little bit different. And I'm not as quite familiar with, you know, the thinking of European OEMs and also suppliers. But they're not as adverse to staying in China. You know, they're kind of a mediator for multinational business. I could see where European companies are able to do both. You know, they're looking outside of China for cost, but they also are not running away because of some of these tariff scares.
I'd like to follow up on those China alternatives in a moment. But first, what was your sense of the overall mood among the EMS companies you've met with?
Oh, I think overall they were silly happy. You know, there was just so much foot traffic and so many chats and exchanging of business cards and what have you. So everyone seemed to be smiling and thinking that the world was great. And that's what the show is all about, is to make new contacts. So from that early process of business development, the show was very successful for just about everybody that I spoke to. They all seemed to be satisfied with the number of contacts, leads, and discussions. So it was an optimistic upscale mood that was pretty much throughout the whole show.
And do you think that was consistent with the prevailing sentiment toward what they expect the market to do over the next, say, you know, 9 to 12 months?
Yeah, I think so. And that could be evidenced by the amount of exhibitors. I mean, everybody's putting their fish hooks in the sea because they know that the global trend will continue to increase in electronic hardware, technology, et cetera. You know, it's no coincidence that there was a record-breaking number of exhibits and certainly number of attendees. Everyone is looking at the upside.
Did the exhibitors feel that any particular region was becoming easier or more difficult to do business with?
Well, China is problematic right now because of undetermined solutions that are out there with between the U.S. and China. China has traditionally been difficult because of some of the rules and regulations that are out there. So I don't think anything really changed from my point of view, other than there's more immediacy in dealing with some of the China complication.
Let's turn our attention to Vietnam. Are the U.S. and China tariffs having any influence on the outsourcing market there?
Absolutely. First of all, let me say that I'm working for TCE, Inc. This is a company in Saigon or Ho Chi Minh City. They're an EMS company that's been around since 2008. And for the first time, they're reaching out globally. I must say that for the last 9 months, 10 months, they have been inundated with new inquiries, people coming to the website, other companies that have heard about us. It's really all about the inertia caused by the tariff war between the U.S. and China.
When you say inertia, what exactly do you mean?
Well, it's just that there's a general consensus to find alternatives of China manufacturing. And that's been driven by two factors. Number one, the labor costs and the cost of doing business in China. It has crept up from year to year. Right now in China, some of the higher labor rates for low and mid-skill laborers are in the $4 to $4.25 an hour in Shenzhen, as an example, in Shanghai, quite a bit higher than it was 5 years ago. So that has been trending, have people rethink new business going to China. But now with the tariff crisis that's out there, that has accelerated the need to find alternatives to China manufacturing. And that's coming from not only EMS thinking, but also from electronic components. Overall, that inertia is pushing people to alternate sites, Vietnam being one of them.
How do the Vietnam labor rates compare to that of China?
Well, in China, we're looking, again, at $4 to $4.25 an hour for low-skilled labor. In Vietnam, that number is around a dollar, maybe a little bit under, a little bit over. So there's quite a big difference in the labor rates per hour.
And I understand that there are groups of Chinese that are working to actually help American companies find resources in Vietnam.
That is a shocking finding, but it is true. There's agencies coming out of China that are actually grouping American OEMs to visit China, you know, under their supervision to find suitable not only EMS companies, but even electromechanical and some substrate technologies as a alternative to what they were formerly buying from China.
Now, are those companies all joint ventures with Chinese partners, or is there a potential to actually meet with standalone Vietnamese-owned companies?
No, they're not necessarily partnering with China. These are standalone Vietnamese companies. Some may be partly affiliated to China, but that's not the marquee of that effort. That effort is just about to try and, I guess, remain in contact with some business that's being moved over to Vietnam.
Now, you've spent quite a bit of time in Malaysia as well. How does the cost structure compare to Vietnam and China?
Yeah, well, my work with Malaysia basically morphed from my affiliation with Singapore. I was with Singapore companies, two companies. Actually, one was a spinoff of the other for 21 years. And with that, Malaysia was the adjacent low-cost area. Today, Malaysia continues to be a low-cost assembly area. The low-end labor rates are in the $250 per hour level. They're predictably going to go up, possibly up to $3 an hour by the year 2020, according to the Malaysian government projections. Malaysia is a great place to do assembly. They're fairly sophisticated in technology. And of course, they have adopted just about everything commercially, legally applied to commercial business from Singapore. So it's a great place to put your high-end assembly and not worry about the contract debates or conformity.
Finally, some of you may know that I'm a Red Sox fan and Joe roots for the Yankees. So who would you prefer to see in pinstripes next season? Manny Machado, Brian Harper, or neither?
Mike, that's a fantasy baseball question. And since it's a fantasy question, I'll tell you who I'd rather have in pinstripes: Mickey Mantle.
I'm not sure that's going to happen. Actually, I would like to see Mickey Mantle in pinstripes next season too. You know, just put him out there in center field and watch every ball go right by him.
I had the privilege of watching him play from the early 60s till his retirement, and it was just nothing like it. And he was just an amazing player, even in his down years as he got older, and certainly his health began to falter. He was just an amazing player. And if I could dial up true fantasy baseball, any one player that I would like to see on the Yankees next year, it would be the Mick.
Well, thank you, Joe. It's always great to chat with you.
Likewise.
Folks who want to get in touch with Joe may contact him at Joe, FAMA, that's Joe Fama, @gmail.com. This has been PCB Chat with Mike Buto. Have a nice day.